The region of France that gives Champagne its name sparkles with possibilities for travelers. To help us plan a trip to the Champagne region of France and to provide pointers for enjoying the good stuff, we're joined now by tour guides Julie Sanvaux and Virginie Moret. Bonjour, mes amis.
Bonjour.
Bonjour.
So Champagne, what do you think about when I say the word Champagne?
Party, celebration, friends.
Okay.
Bubbles, effervescence.
And if you're looking at a map and you say Champagne, what do you think about?
Eastern France, northeastern France.
One of the most northern regions where they grow wine.
And it really is synonymous with the beloved bubbly wine. Now, they must work hard to protect the image of Champagne because
Absolutely. Everybody
produces this kind of wine, and a lot of people call it Champagne, but the people of Champagne try to say it's only us that can call it that.
I lived for 10 years in the U.S., and when people were saying, I'm bringing Champagne, I would be like, this is Californian sparkling wine, but it's, you know, it's branding. It's what we call the terroir in France.
Yeah.
You know, wines from Champagne, they have to come from there and they have to follow methods, you know,
Champagne
for making
method.
That exactly to be called Champagne.
So there are bubbly sparkling wines from other parts of France
yes.
that are not called Champagne? What
yes.
are they, what are
we
they
have
called?
The Crémant d'Alsace, Crémant de la Loire, Clairette de Die. So pretty much every region of France where
so
they make
Clairette,
wine.
Clairette, I would pronounce it as an American Clairette. That's a bubbly wine?
Not the same Clairette as what was exported to England.
Okay, that's
no,
a different.
Clairette, yes. Clairette.
But that word is used for the bubbly. And
yes.
then a Crémant.
Crémant.
Sometimes they call it Mousseux.
And in Italy?
Prosecco.
Prosecco.
Yeah.
Spain.
Cava. The same
Cava,
methods
yeah.
of making champagne, but you mm-hmm. can't even call it méthode champenoise,
mm-hmm.
but you have to call it traditional methods of making bubbly wine.
Okay.
Even Yves Saint Laurent, I think it was Yves Saint Laurent back in the 90s, he tried to make a perfume which was shaped like the cork.
Yeah.
The bottle was shaped like the cork of champagne, and he called it champagne, and there was a lawsuit. No, you couldn't call
so
it champagne.
So they really are serious about that. They
oh,
defend
yes. it.
Now, it goes way back historically.
Right.
Champagne was invented in Epernay, right? In Champagne country.
Yeah, and what they had to go through historically to defend the vineyards and to defend the champagne and to sell it, because it was so difficult to produce it and to export it because of the bottles and the bubbles and the... It would go bad very easily, and so they worked so hard to make it what it is that they deserve it. They deserve the name.
Sure, and they wanted to protect the quality. If somebody
right.
makes some second-rate stuff and calls it champagne, it's not going to be good for your brand.
And it's a pretty recent wine that we have because originally, as Julie mentioned, it was very north, so it's very mm-hmm. hard to get good quality wine, and they were competing for the still wine with the Burgundy wines, which are known to be better. So after the accident of the monk Dom Pérignon, of finding out that with a second fermentation you could keep the bubble in the wine, you know, it took a few centuries before finally when we get train transportation and the glassmaker are getting better at making glass that would not break.
Okay, because
then
the champagne bottle has a reinforced bottom, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it? Because there's so much power packed in
and
here.
And the glass
it just
is
wants
thicker.
To pop. When I open a wine bottle, it doesn't pop out. But when I open a champagne bottle, of course, it pops. Is that because of the second fermentation?
Yes, the pressure that you actually have in the bottle.
So explain just in very easy terms, what is champagne? I mean, how do they make it?
So to make wine, you need fermentation.
So you need ferment the grape juice.
Yes, you need sugar to become alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is that in still wine, you want to prevent a second fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
But in champagne, you actually want to trigger it.
And how do they do that?
So they add yeast and sugar,
mm-hmm.
which in France, you can't add anything to the wine unless you're doing champagne. And that's what you want to do that. And so you're going to create a second fermentation, which will happen this time not in the barrel or the stainless steel, you know, vat, but in the bottle.
In the bottle.
Which you cap with a beer cap and that you turn upside down.
So this is quite labor intensive then on this upside down part.
It used to be very labor intensive.
Because I've seen those racks and,
yes.
and you know, they say they every day they have to turn it a little bit.
A quarter turn.
What's the purpose of that?
It's called riddling. And the purpose is when they put the yeast in it, it when it dies, it kind of sticks to the side of the bottle. And they need to get it up into the neck of the bottle, so then they can pop that bottle cap off, and the pressure will push the yeast out. Then they just fill it back up with a little bit of wine or sometimes
some
sugar.
Some kind of a liqueur or something.
Sometimes brandy.
So but it takes a while for the sediment to slowly spin
little
down.
Little by little
cap.
It slides
so eventually
down.
You've spun it over time, and it's all the impurities are at the near the cap.
Mm.
And then do they freeze it?
So they have to freeze it. And it's interesting to see how it's made by hand because originally there was no machine. Nowadays
yeah.
it's made with machine. But the people who were, you know, making what we call the dégorgement, disgorging, I assume you call it in English, they had to be super fast. They had to freeze
it, pop it out,
and then add
the
wine,
sweet stuff,
or add
the
wine,
personality, or the wine,
or sugar also if you wanted
it
sweeter.
And that would give
or
the personality to this or that wine.
Exactly.
I would think that little extra you add, and then you cap it
with the real, you know, cork this time.
Yeah, the famous cork.
And that process is called riddling when they turn them. And a riddler, a good riddler, can turn about 60,000 bottles a day.
A riddler. Mm-hmm. So two hands going through, turn.
In those racks that,
And then the bottle goes steeper and steeper and steeper, and eventually it's ready to...
And Rick is doing this with his bottle, so when he opens it, it's going to explode.
Well, let's do this. This is Travel with Rick Steves. I'm talking with Virginie Morier and Julie Sanvo. We're talking champagne, which can only be called champagne if it's from Champagne country, 2 hours away from Paris by TGV train, I believe. And the big city is Reims.
Reims.
R-E-I-M-S. This is one of those towns that are hard to pronounce. It sort of rhymes with France.
Yes.
But it's spelled like Reims. The average traveler would look at that and go, Reims, but it's Reims. Virginie, you've got a wonderful ability to say it. How would you say it in French?
Reims.
Reims.
And then you have to pronounce the S at the end, which usually we don't. We don't say Paris, we say Paris.
Right.
But we say Reims, so it's the exception.
It's the exception. And Julie, you have lived in France for a long time, but you grew up in America. Let's hear you say it.
Reims. I roll it a little bit more.
Reims. Yeah.
That's good. And then champagne is from many different caves in Reims. If you're touring, you can go to Epernay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the famous, the legendary discovery. The monk accidentally fermented his wine twice. And he goes running down the halls. Brothers, he's in the abbey. I still picture this 1,000 years ago. And brothers, brothers, come quickly. I'm drinking stars. So that would be a great day for champagne lovers. And shall we have a little bit?
Oh, yes. Of course.
Never say no to champagne.
Oh, I didn't need to sell you on that. So this is, I just love this. You know, it's sort of a tradition, isn't it? I mean, it's a ritual, I mean.
It is a ritual opening. And even when you start to open that, if you'll notice, you always undo the wire cage, you turn it 7 times.
You do.
It's
okay,
twisted,
so I'm
going to
do this now. And I was demonstrating the spinning thing, so we don't know how energized this is going to be. But I'm going to spin it 7 times. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You got it.
Magic number.
Well, I didn't realize that. All my life I've been popping these things.
And you're not at the Tour de France, so you're not going to spill.
So I take
most
the little, this is like a dog's muzzle. I take that off.
People collect those, the top.
Now I'm going to walk me through this. We're going
to. Well, what you want to do is you want to hold the cork.
Yeah.
And you want to twist the bottle. You don't twist the cork, you twist the bottle.
Is that a tradition?
And you hold it at an angle.
Yeah.
And that way it shouldn't explode.
Okay.
But you
a little bit more of an angle.
More of an angle?
You shook it several times.
So
before.
I'm holding it at a 45-degree angle, basically.
Yes.
And I'm going to hold
turn
the corks,
bottle.
And I'm turning the bottle.
Yes.
And then?
And what you really want to do is just make it burp. You want to make it sigh.
Oh,
you don't
want
make it pop.
It's not like after a football game and you're going to lose all your
champagne. No, we do that, and it's fun, and that's okay. But they do it. When they do it, it just goes, psst.
Oh, so I'm going to let it, like, I'm going to burp the baby.
Right.
Okay, ready?
Yeah. Nice. And it, good.
Oh, and it's got that beautiful,
he didn't spill a drop.
That beautiful steam. It's like, oh,
he didn't
baby.
Waste a drop.
I must pour you some. No, is there any trick to pouring it? Do I hold
you
the glass
can
a certain way?
Hold the glass at an angle so you're not going to have foam.
Oh, so you minimize the foam by holding it at an angle.
Yeah.
And I poured about
merci.
All these.
Usually, this is actually the only wine in France where you go to the top of the glass. Other wines, you never want to have a full glass because then you don't have room to swirl it. But on the champagne, usually you
go
can
to the
fill
top.
The top. Here we go.
Oh, that
Lucky
sounds
Julie.
Lovely.
Ooh, la la.
Thank you for telling him that for my glass. I appreciate that.
I love that.
That.
Now, let's just listen for a minute. I like this. Okay, ready? And it sort of, my cup runneth over, but it does not
perfect.
Spill.
It was perfect. It was perfect. You got that foam to go up there, but not over the edge.
And then you've got these bubblies. I mean, it just makes you feel festive.
It does.
Exactly.
It's like something great happened. And then what do we say?
Santé.
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 To your health.
À la vôtre.
À la vôtre.
À la vôtre.
Life is good.
Pas mal, as the French do say.
Not
bad.
I like that. Pas mal. Not bad. It's great to be drinking champagne right here, I got to tell you. But let's say you're traveling around France and you want to have a little more background on this champagne before you actually drink it. You can go to Rance and go to the famous Champagne Caves. And there's hundreds of Champagne Caves. A lot of them are open to the public. What is the process for going to... I like Rance because you can get there from Paris easily. It's got a great cathedral with amazing history. It was the place for royal coronations, what 26 kings were crowned there, France, mm-hmm. I believe, mm-hmm. going all the way back to Clovis 1,500 years ago. Incredible sound and light show.
Yes.
It's laser lighting and this glorious lighting, and you can actually inhabit it with workers and kings and coronations and tell the whole story on the facade. Mm-hmm. And people gather after dark, and you sit there in the park in front of the cathedral, and it comes to light with all these lasers and great sound, and it's brilliant.
It transforms and it. It's jaw-dropping.
In Rance, that's one place where you really want to remember to do that because that's,
definitely.
I think, one of the best in France. And then also World War II, 1945, the war was finished, and Eisenhower and the Allies accepted the unconditional surrender of the German forces right there. And it's an amazing little museum if you're interested in that
history. The Surrender Museum, it's left just as it was when they signed.
I love it. And then you can go, after you've done your history now and your art, you can go out to the Champagne Caves. Let's just say you're going to go to Tatinje. That's one of the Champagne Caves that are available for the public there. What's the experience?
So you go to Tatinje. It's better to have a reservation. They do a different group, you know, timing. And then you're going to go down into the cellar. So you're not going to have an elevator. You do have to use your legs. This is before the tasting.
Oh, yeah.
So the
down
tasting
into
is
the
after.
Cellar, that would be a series of caves deep down in that kept the temperature the same all the time.
Exactly. We call them crayères. So it's kind of a chalky stone that we have there. And you're going to see some of them date back from the Roman time. Most of them will be from the 14th, 15th century. And they explain to you how they make champagne. They show you the riddling, the old method. And then you would finish by tasting one, two, three, or four of their champagne.
Tasting?
Absolutely.
Did somebody say tasting?
Did somebody say tasting?
Oh, that's my kind of tour. Here's to champagne.
Santé.
Wow. French culture. You can drink it.
And this is a Brut. You had a Brut. Now we have several type of
You can tell
champagne.
That just by tasting.
Yeah, it's drier.
Tasted wet.
We have Brut and Sec. Sec means dry, but it's the sweetest. So the Brut is the champagne that is going to have the less amount of sugar added. Now, in the old times, they used to add way more sugar than they do now, but they have to add some of the sugar. And so you want a Brut when you have it as a aperitif, like we're having now.
Right.
Because if it's too sweet, it's just, you know, that's not something that you want to have before dinner. Mm. And then if you have champagne with dessert, then maybe you want something sweeter.
So you look for the word. This says Brut. Or sec. So
or demi-sec, which is halfway through.
Okay. So but if you're doing it to enjoy the flavor of the champagne without something sweet to eat with it, you'd probably have Brut.
Mm-hmm. And now they're making rosé champagnes.
That are very festif.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the difference with, you know, champagne and other wines is that you don't have a vintage on every bottle because it's actually a blend. This is a region of France which is very north for growing vines. And so it's not consistent. So they have the right to blend different years. If you have a year on a bottle, it means it comes from only 1 year. But those are exceptional years.
Okay.
And they're going to be more
expensive.
So it's
better to blend it.
It's the way they've been making it because they don't have the production that they would have other places.
As we're learning right now on Travel with Rick Steves, champagne is so much more than just tiny bubbles in your wine. The Champagne region itself in the northeast of France is a great destination to explore. Our guides are Virginie Moret, who lives in Lyon, and American-born Julie Sanvaux, who's lived in Burgundy for many years. So I'm starting to feel this champagne, but can you teach me just a French, like what you would say when you're having a good time together, more than santé, what would you say?
If you want to be formal, you say à la vôtre, that means à votre santé, to your health. Or you can say just santé. Where I live in the countryside in France, we say chin-chin.
Chin-chin, yeah, we do the same.
Chin-chin. And then is there some sort of a blessing you give to people? May you live...
Santé means... To your health.
Yeah.
So it's the more you drink, the more you have santé, the healthier you are.
The healthier you get. All right. And we're going to enjoy French culture with the help of our better understanding of champagne. Virginie Moret and Julie Sanvaux, I would like to drink to you. And thank
Merci.
You very much for our lesson and a beautiful slice of French culture. A votre santé.
Oh, there's one thing. You have to look at the person in the
eyes
when you're...
Always.
Always.
Very nice. Merci bien.
Merci.
Au revoir.
Au revoir.
So good.
the creative Celtic spirit is in full bloom as the three-day Hogmanay Street Party in Edinburgh makes it one of Europe's biggest festivals for New Year's, complete with what's said to be the biggest midnight fireworks display in the world. Whether you like crazy crowds or prefer a more intimate observance at home, Anne Doig and Ken Hanley are here to tell us why Edinburgh, Scotland is a grand place to welcome in the new year. Anne and Ken, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having us.
Are you looking forward to New Year's in Edinburgh?
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you celebrate New Year's Eve in Edinburgh?
Very traditionally. I know we have what's said to be the biggest street party in the world, but you know, if you're going for tradition, which I still do and Anne still does, then you make sure the house is clean. So the house, in other words, has got to be clean. And you make sure that you've got enough drink for your friends and things like that. People go first footing. And to go first footing properly, you have to have a piece of black coal, a wee piece of cake, and a wee bottle of whiskey.
What's first footing?
It goes, you go to friends, you just tap
a
door.
You go visiting, and they're not going to turn you away.
Absolutely not. And I think if your first footer, traditionally in Scotland, is tall, dark, and handsome, that means that you're going to have a year of good luck.
It's quite interesting. It has to be dark. And I wonder if anyone knows why it has to be a dark person, dark hair. It dates back to the attacks by the Vikings, the blonde, tall Vikings. If you're blonde, you might be a threat. So it had to be a dark person. And you open at the strike of midnight, you open your front door and rush through and open the back door. So you're welcoming in the new year and letting the old year out. So there's all these traditions that we adhere to.
Wow. Now, is there something that is like a countdown in Edinburgh?
It's fireworks, really. There's a big street party, you see, so they'll be counting down on the stage. There are entertainers and bands playing. And then all of a sudden, there's an explosion of fireworks over Edinburgh Castle.
But then you get down with your neighbours and you open your front door?
Absolutely.
And you open the back door?
Yes.
Total strangers can turn up at your door and everyone's welcome. And they come in and you offer a drink, you offer a piece of cake, you have a wee blether, you know, and then
that's
you move along.
A wee blether is a
wee blether is a little talk.
Have a wee blether. And
it
then
sort of gets known in the community who's got open house. That's what happens.
Okay.
And if you've got open house, then everyone piles in to visit you.
If you're in Scotland on New Year's Eve, it's just like one big open house. People are on the streets, they've got their coal and their drink and their cake, and they're going to knock on a stranger's door and celebrate the new year.
Absolutely.
We all sing Auld Lang Syne.
Auld Lang Syne.
Yeah, we do.
That's Scottish, isn't it?
Yes. Robert Burns.
That's Robert Burns. What does that mean, Auld Lang Syne?
For the sake of Auld Lang Syne. A lot of different interpretations. I would say for old friends.
Remembering.
Friends for friendship's sake.
And you know the song. Sing the song for me.
It's old sentimental. Song,
old
you know.
Acquaintance
be forgot and never brought to mind. Should old acquaintance be forgot for the sake of Auld Lang Syne? Now, here's the hand, my trusty friend, and here's the hand, oh mine. And it goes on.
And you're all holding hands.
It's this inbuilt thing in the Scots that, you know, it's been great to see you. We don't want to see you go, but because you're going away, for the sake of Auld Lang Syne, keep that memory, keep everything, that heartfelt thing.
So that's the punchline of the lyric is, for the sake of
Auld Lang Syne.
The old sake, the old
good
sake
old
of
friends.
Times. Yeah.
Yes.
For the sake of Auld Lang Syne, Happy New Year.
And
happy
New Year.
To all the best to you. Happy New Year, Rick Boy.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton,
Donna Bardsley,
and Casmeral Hall.
Website uploads are by Sherry Quirt and Andrew Wakeling.
Promotion support comes from Sheila Gerzoff, and our theme music is by Jerry Frank.
You'll find more at ricksteves.com/radio.
Wishing you warm and healthy holidays.
From all of us at Travel with Rick Steves.